The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And hey, have you signed up to be part of the TIJ Army? Go ahead and do it now at podcastone.com/Jericho. You'll get everything you need to know about this show delivered right to your email every week, including all of the details about all the episodes, who the guests are going to be, what we got going on. Be in the know. Sign up at podcastone.com/Jericho. Do it now. And now that we got you hooked up with all the TIJ info, we can now get down to business. Two things. First, you're about to hear me and my best friend Kevin Owens live in Toronto. We did a live Talk is Jericho taping, just like we did with Christian a few months ago. We told some stories. KO and I answered all your questions, recorded the whole damn thing. So even if you couldn't be in Toronto for this amazing, monumental live event, you would not miss out. So that's coming up. Kevin Owens makes his third appearance on the show, and it's all new stories in front of a live studio audience. You're not going to miss it. Before we get to Kevin, second of all, I want to talk about the Royal Rumble. Yes, it's true. I am the longest Royal Rumble competitor of all time. I have the longest lasting cumulative time, 4 minutes. Sorry, 4 minutes. That's a long time, eh? That's more like a Santino Marella. 4 hours, 56 minutes, and 12 seconds is the amount of time I've spent in the Royal Rumble over my entire career. And I'll take it. You know, I think that's a pretty cool thing. I never won the damn thing, but still, that's a record. 4 hours, 56 minutes, 12 seconds, and I spent over an hour in this year's Royal Rumble. Yes, it's true. I am the hashtag 61-minute man. That's my new catchphrase, so feel free to spread it. It was trending worldwide, all across the board. Royal Rumble's always a blast, and I knew before going in if I could last 4 minutes that I would take over the record that was held by Triple H. And I was a little nervous because at the very beginning, Big Cass throws me over the ropes. I grab the rope and land on the apron side, run up to the top or whatever it was that I did. Something that I do every match pretty much. But I was really nervous that night, what was going to happen? What if I slip and it's the one time I can't fall and I actually do? But I did not fall. I lasted for 61 minutes. I am the hashtag 61 minute man. And I am the record holder, the longest cumulative time in Royal Rumble history is Chris Jericho. So add that to the list of accolades. Thanks to all of you for letting me know about that. I didn't even know about it until a couple days before the match. So very, very excited about that. And once again, thanks to all of you for supporting me and for being there and for being big fans of the 61 Minute Man.
Talk is Jericho.
My guest today is not only the Universal Champion of the WWE, and not only is he a totally sexy guy, but he's also my best friend. I'll say it again. He's my best friend. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Owens. I thought you were going to jump. I was like, here he goes.
Are we sitting anywhere?
I just stood beside me out.
Are we moving the table?
Yeah, we should just kind of look at each other.
What were they chanting?
Oh, wow. That was good.
That was good. Too early to find out.
There was the one guy.
Wait, whoa.
Okay, first of all.
Stand up, whoever said that.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey.
Okay, first
you want to be
all,
cool? It's time to be brave. Is that you? Come down here. Come over here. Come. No. Hey.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jabba the Hutt is in the house.
So, as we can see, is this your attempt at looking like AJ with the vest? Okay.
Is this your attempt at looking like Kevin Owens?
That's exactly how Kevin Owens looked.
Good comeback.
It was a decent attempt at a comeback, but you just failed miserably. Let me ask you a question. You say he's the better champion.
He's the only champion.
Is he? Okay. Here's the thing. Let me ask this.
Yeah.
Would a real champion make a commitment and then not show up?
All right. Let's get this guy out of here. Go.
You're dismissed.
I'm sorry.
See you later.
Go sit down. Go sit down. Go sit down now. Hey.
Let's give him a hand.
Go sit down.
He tries really hard. Let's give him a nice hand. All right, now get out of here. You've overstayed your welcome.
There you go. Good way to... Hold on one second.
That's a good way to start.
First of all, fat guy in the Viscera outfit. Hold on. You know what happens when you interrupt my show? You want to know what happens when you interrupt my show with Kevin Owens, my best friend? You want to know? Fat guy in the Viscera outfit? You just made the list!
You're going on there right next to AJ Styles' soccer mom haircut.
There you go. All right. So we can tell right off the bat we've got a loud and rowdy crowd here, Kevin. This is kind of what always happens in Toronto. Always very crazy, passionate, awesome fans. Have you worked in Toronto before, WWE or otherwise?
Yeah, I came here a number of times with various independent promotions. Ring of Honor, obviously, was one of them, but yeah.
Didn't you have the first Ring of Honor show? Were you like the main event or something here in Toronto?
Yeah, it was me and Nigel McGuinness for the Ring of Honor title. But I've also been here with other promotions, like local promotions. Mainly, there's a company now called Smash Wrestling who's doing really well here. Yeah, they got a really good thing going, and they yell that at their show.
Yeah, okay, good. So four people here have gone to the Smash show. So when you came here with Ring of Honor, because you were kind of part of the expansion of Ring of Honor, it became kind of a nationwide, more of a real popular, the legit second promotion or third in the country. Was that a lot of it had to do with you and the stuff that you were doing?
I mean, I'd like to think so, but obviously what helped expand Ring of Honor is it was owned by Kerry Silkin for the longest time. It was a great guy who was running the promotion off of his own back with his own money, keeping it alive, and eventually there's a broadcasting company called Sinclair Broadcast Group that moved in and bought the company. Mm-hmm. And they, with their TV, like they're a TV company, they have TV stations all over the U.S., so that kind of helped expand it, but when that happened, I guess the timing was that I was a champion or I was about to become the champion. I was a focal point of the storylines and stuff like that. So I'd like to say I played a part, but obviously there's a lot of guys, really good guys involved with Ring of Honor that all worked very hard to make it as good as they could. And, now it is where it's at because a lot of people worked really hard at it, and I'm one of them.
But a lot of the guys, it's amazing how many of the guys from Ring of Honor are now here. It's like the whole crew of guys.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously have NXT that provides people for the main roster, but it almost seems like Ring of Honor is now providing people for NXT,
right.
That's a whole other topic we're not going to get into right now. But, I mean, it's just the logical, when I was a kid growing up wanting to be a wrestler, I didn't know how I would make it here. I just knew I have to find a way. And through time, you know, you just kind of, you wrestle here, you wrestle there, you get noticed here, you get, and it, you know, it's kind of a snowball effect. But I knew I had to get the Ring of Honor in order to ever make it here, because that's where most of the eyes are. If you're not, you know, at the time, especially, you know, in 06, 07, whatever it was, if you're not a huge bodybuilder guy who looks like the, you know, typical WWE superstar, I guess you just kind of had to fight your way in. And I think Ring of Honor was a good place. Like, that's where, you know, Daniel Bryan came from. And, you know, at the time, I remember Daniel Bryan got signed by WWE. Nigel McGuinness was about to get signed as well. But, you know, due to medical issues, he couldn't sign. But they were both coming to WWE.
Was he good, Nigel McGuinness?
He was great. I mean, whenever I do talk to him, I keep telling him he should just come back to wrestling already. But he just won't do it. I think he's made peace with the fact that, you know, when he couldn't sign with WWE, that was a big blow for him. And he eventually just decided to hang up his boots. He's still Ring of Honor. He's a commentator now, and he plays, I think he's the commissioner. But he's doing great. He was very good, very talented. One of my favorite matches is the one from Toronto with Nigel McGuinness. One of my favorite matches of all time, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was with him?
Yeah, yeah.
It's because we all have guys that we know should have been bigger stars, you know, and I always hear about Nigel. For me, it was a guy called Dr. Luther. It was a guy from Calgary that worked around the world, and he was so good, and he could play any character, and everybody that worked him just loved it, but just never got the break that you would expect. And it seems like Nigel had that kind of vibe as well.
Oh, yeah, I would definitely say that. I mean, I think if it hadn't been for his arm or whatever kept him from getting signed.
Is that what it was, some kind of arm?
He had a tricep or bicep injury that he needed surgery on, and for some reason he opted not to have the surgery because he didn't think he needed it. But I think if that hadn't been there, he'd probably be with us at Survivor Series today.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And I know that's something that he's had a really hard time dealing with over the past, you know, couple of years, not making it here, but I think you should find solace in the fact that he definitely would have made it here if sense had been different.
Let's talk about your earlier years, about you saying that you were watching wrestling and wanted to be a wrestler, because something that's very interesting you told me this years ago was that you actually learned English from watching wrestling.
Yeah.
Because you come from Montreal, and you can still hear the accent, right? Montreal, great. Another great wrestling city.
Are you clapping for Montreal right now? Really? You're all from Montreal, right? Because this is probably the only time I've heard Montreal get a pop in Toronto. So.
But I find that so interesting, though, that you learned English basically via
Jim Ross.
Yeah.
I was always exposed to the English language because my dad, who's in the crowd right now, right
dad
there,
if everybody
can give him a big
right
hand.
Mr. Owens! Mr. Owens!
Mr. Owens! Mr. Owens!
There you go. All right.
So my dad always watched TV in English, but I was just kind of growing up around it. I didn't understand anything that was being said, but then eventually he rented a tape of WrestleMania 11 at the local video store, and I watched it with him. That's when I decided I wanted to be a wrestler. So I started watching wrestling religiously then. And I guess it was in fourth grade when I realized English, I was starting to learn English through wrestling, because we had like trivia during lunchtime, you know, as an activity. And apparently I was a nerd who liked to do trivia at lunchtime. So I was sitting with my little trivia team, and they asked what the word in English, in French, they said, what's the word for elbow in English? And I'm like, oh, well, Vader doesn't elbow. And I remember like specifically having that mental image of Vader just crushing somebody when the elbow dropped. And having Jim Ross yell elbow drops. I'm like, oh, hey, elbow? I'm like, that's right. I'm like, oh, wrestling is useful. And then after that, I started watching Friends with my dad. So that picked that up, yeah. So wrestling and Friends are responsible for the fact that I can speak English right now.
I'm surprised you don't walk around going, my God, my God.
So wait, that was a thing. So if you ask the guys that I first started training with in wrestling, I would use Jim Ross terminology because I thought it was everyday English. Like, slobber knocker was just a word for me. Yeah, so there.
I remember, my dad played in the NHL, and there's a lot of French-Canadians on the team.
Yeah.
And so I went to school one time, and they give you a bunch of names, and you had to say if it was a boy's name or a girl's name. So it was like Michael, that's a boy. You know, Karen, that's a girl. and they had Jean, J-E-A-N.
Yeah.
Well, growing up in a hockey household, Jean is a guy's name. Yeah. It's a French guy's name. Yeah. So I wrote it was a boy's name, and I got it wrong because it was a girl's name.
They were wrong.
They were wrong, right.
Yeah, no,
but right.
Because that spelled that way, it is a boy's name.
Right. But
what they're going for is Jeanne, which is actually my sister-in-law's name. It's J-E-A-N-N-E. That's the girl version. So you were right.
I said I was right. And this was like in middle America, St. Louis. And I remember I took it home.
Terrible.
I was like,
school
this isn't fair. I know Jean Rattel. It's a guy. You can't say that. So when you were finally learning English, and then once again, like you said, now everyone knows, okay, you want to get into the business, you go to Ring of Honor, you go to NXT. But even just 10 years ago, it was still kind of not that easy. So did you find somebody to train with? How did you get into the business?
Well, once I decided I was going to be a wrestler, thankfully my parents never told me, oh, no, you can't do that. It's silly. You know, you got to be something boring, like a mathematician or something.
Mathematician. So, how many mathematicians are out there?
So they encouraged it, but, you know, I was 11 years old, so what am I going to do then? We would just, you know, they would take me to all the shows, they would buy all the pay-per-views for me and everything, and then when I was 14, my mom, through somebody at her work, heard that there's a wrestling show, like a local wrestling show coming to town. It's like, my mom works in a really small town, and that small town has what we call the Corn Festival, where they celebrate corn. And there's a yearly wrestling show there now. And they're like, well, the guy that could train you is going to wrestle there so you can go meet him. So my parents took me there, and what an experience this was. Because it's not a well set up show. It's not like there's no cool lighting or there's a terrible ring.
Yeah.
With no guardrails and just people sitting. It's outdoors on a baseball field. People are drunk and eating corn and watching wrestling, you know? And most of the wrestlers were really terrible. But I remember when I got there, at the time I'm 14 and I have I think a Steve Austin shirt maybe. And I noticed two guys in the front row that have wrestling shirts. So I'm like, oh, they're my age or so. Those guys are cool. Like everyone else is just a drunk corn lover who wants to see wrestling. So I watched the show, and then after the match, I meet the guy who was a guy by the name of Serge Audouin, who's a local wrestler, and he was actually pretty decent. You know, I at a young age, I had watched wrestling enough that I knew by watching him, like, oh, this guy, if I do train with him, I think I'll be okay because he knows, like, he was by far the best guy on that show,
right.
You know? He's the only one who didn't look he was going to kill himself every time he hit a move, you know? So we met with him, and he explained how it works. Like, yeah, you could come to my wrestling, you know, where my ring is, which was in a barn, like an actual barn. And he's like, and I'll train you. So the next week I went, and I started training there. I was 14. My first class ended, and I didn't think I could make it. My brain was just trying to come out of my head. I was in so much pain.
So rattled, yeah.
Yeah, like my mom worked night shift at the time, so she dropped me off at the barn and then left to go to work. My dad picked me back up, and then my mom called me at night. And usually I was up to like 2 in the morning, but she called me at midnight on her break, and I remember I was already asleep. So when I answered, I was half asleep. She couldn't believe it. She's like, are you sleeping? I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, how did it go? I'm like, oh, I don't think I can do this. And she was really astonished because I wanted it so bad. She's like, all right, well, we'll try again next Thursday, and if you can't, you can't. So then the next day, I spent all day like practicing falling on the dirt outside, basically, to like kind of just get it out of my. And thankfully, Thursday, by the time I went in there, my body reacted a little better. Like my head was still in a lot of pain after, but I realized like I can do this. So I hung in there until about 3 weeks later. The school shut down because the barn was too old and was going to collapse and everything. So then I went over a year before, you know, without training until I eventually found Jacques Rougeau, who was known in WWE as the Mountie. Nope, no clapping for him. Trust me, you don't need to clap for him. Absolutely not. You don't need to clap. Yeah, so I found his school and I started training there.
Not a pleasant guy?
No, I mean... So just a tidbit of how he is, basically. I trained with him for 3 years. The way he does things is his trainees would wrestle on his shows because he would also run shows. And, you know, he's got a pretty... The Rougeau name in Quebec is pretty big as far as wrestling goes, you know. So when he would announce a show, he would book a building that holds like 4,000 people. And, you know, he'd sell maybe 1,500 tickets and end up giving like 1,000 away to companies or whatever. So you'd wrestle in front of like 2,500 people, which in Quebec was way huge. Better than anything else. You know, sure. The best you could get at the time was maybe 200 people on an indie show. But I didn't know anything about indies, so I trained with him. I'd work his shows, but he would only do shows once every 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. So you really weren't getting any experience, you know? So eventually, after a couple of years, some of my friends that trained with me there decided to leave to go wrestle on independents around Quebec just to learn experience, and I could see how good of a time they were having. And I wanted to do that too. So I asked him if he would allow his trainees to go wrestle on smaller shows just to get experience, because at the time he wasn't running any shows. He said he had health issues or whatever. So he had no shows planned. I'm like, I can't just come twice a week to this flea market, because that's where his wrestling school was at the time. So we started, the Rougeau school started at a really nice gym. Like, it was in a boxing ring, but whatever. It was in a gym, really professional. Like, people could come watch us train and were like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then I guess the rent was too high, so we moved to a flea market. So people would go to the flea market on Saturday morning to buy, like, I'll buy this old rug, I'll get a slushie, and I guess I'll watch these guys train for wrestling, you know? So anyway, I kept thinking, I can't keep coming to this flea market twice a week to train on my own, because Jacques wouldn't even step foot in the ring at this point. Like, he would just kind of look at us and, okay, like, just half, like, in a daze, like, he's not even... Anyway, so I'm like, I can't keep doing this. I need to wrestle. So he allowed. He's like, yeah, okay, you can wrestle for smaller promotions, no problem. Then after maybe two months of that, he calls me one day. He's like, all right, here's what's going to happen. WWE's coming to town. And that's another thing. You know, you'd always dangle that carrot of the WWE relationship, which at the time I was unaware that he really doesn't have one, you know? So I'm like, oh, man, they're coming to town. Yeah, Raw events. Like, this in a couple months, Raw's coming, and two of my trainees are getting a tryout match, and I want it to be you and another guy. But you, for that to happen, you have to stop wrestling on the smaller shows because I don't want you to get hurt. Excuse me. And you have to sign a 10-year contract with me, which gives me 15% of all wages you make. And I'm like, at the time, I'm like, well, I'm a kid, and I don't know how this works. Yeah. I don't know. Like, well, I don't care about the 15% money. I don't care. At the time, I was 2003, I was 19. Like, but I don't want to not wrestle everywhere else. That was my issue.
Yeah.
So I kept asking, please let me wrestle. And, like, we don't even know when the show's coming. It could be in 6 months. We don't know. Like, so a month out from the show, I'll stop wrestling for the other companies. But until then, I need to keep doing this. I was doing it, like, twice a week. Even if it was 50 people, 100 people, whatever, I was having a blast. Like, I needed it. He's like, no, this is you either stop and you come back to my school full time to prepare for this thing, or you don't get it. Mm-hmm. So I remember taking maybe 3 seconds to think about it, and he's like, well, you know what? You already made your decision. And then he hung up on me. I was 19, and that's the last time I spoke to him. Oh, and before he hung up, he did say I would never make it there without him. Mm-hmm. Suck it. Little tidbit, too, just to bring it all forward. His son, who at the time when I left his school was maybe 10 or whatever, is now 20-something years old, and he's huge.
Huge, right? Cedric,
like
6'8".
Yeah, Cedric, 6'8", whatever, hundreds of pounds. And he's, like, ripped and shredded, and he just had a tryout. And I had heard that because Jacques is, how do you put it, crazy, that he wouldn't let Cedric go on his own. Like an adult, he had to go there too for the tryout, even though people told him, you don't need to come.
Right.
It's like, no, I'm going. I happened to be in Florida the first day of the tryout. So, of course, I'm like, Jacques's going to be there. I'm going. Unfortunately for me, when I went, he wasn't there. Mm. He ended up showing up in the afternoon. I was already gone. But man, how sweet would it have been to walk in there?
It's the like, champ.
It's for all intents, it's not, but like, walk in there, like, the first thing you see when you walk in the performance center, the right is a picture of me with a title. You know what I mean? Man, it would have been so sweet. But
how do you say "suck it" in French?
Sisley. It sounds a lot less cool in French than it does in English. Sisley.
Hey, Jacques Rougeau. Sisley. We had to sign that same contract. It must have been every school you had to sign the contract, and it was for 10% of your wages for the next 10 years. And I noticed, because I was in school with Lance Storm, and he's like, we have to sign this. And it's like, what do we do? I was like, sign it. Read what it says. We were signing 10% to the campus called Hart Brothers Pro Wrestling. It said Hart Brothers Pro Wetesting. They spelt wrestling wrong. They spelt it W-T-E-S-T-L-I-N-G. I'm like, there's no such thing as Hart Brothers Pro Wetesting. Just sign it. Yeah. So, there you go.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This is Talk is Jericho.
All right, back to Talk is Jericho, live in Toronto with my best friend, Kevin Owens.
So when you're talking about those early years, was there anybody that you were wrestling with at that point in time that's still in the business or that's still around now?
Yeah, a couple of the guys stuck around. Actually, the guy right next to my dad right now is my very first opponent ever.
What?
Right here, Mike. Yeah.
First opponent?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was one of the two
dudes.
What
was his wrestling name?
His wrestling name was Gorgeous Mike. As you can see, he holds the name very well.
He's gorgeous.
He still is. He still wrestles around Quebec, and he was one of the two guys in the front row that had wrestling shirts too at that Festival. Yeah. So we trained together in the barn, and then when we switched, like the barn closed or whatever, the wrestling school closed, we went over to Rougeau's together. So I've actually known him for many years, and there's a couple guys that still wrestle locally.
Who won the first match between? Were you Kevin Steen?
Oh, I did. You know why? But the sole reason
was it Kevin Steen?
I was the kid Kevin Steen.
The kid.
That was Rougeau's like genius marketing. Oh, you know what? We're gonna call you the kid. Oh wow, that's never been done before. Awesome. So I was the kid, and I was wrestling in shorts and a cutoff T-shirt.
Nice.
If that's not
there, you go. Foreshadowing, yeah.
And the only reason I won the first match is because Rougeau would have us practice the match move for move to make sure everything was perfect. And I kept trying to hit a 450 splash. And I just couldn't nail it down. And this poor guy had to lay down 3 times a week for months and just pray that I wouldn't destroy him.
Wow.
And I destroyed him every time. My feet, my knees, everything. Just destroyed.
Because I've taken the Kevin Owens frog splash.
Yes.
And that ain't no treat
here
either,
you go.
I'll tell you what.
At the time, I was also maybe half my weight. So we ended up, because Rougeau thought I would eventually hit the 450, I was going to go over. Never managed to hit it before the first show. So we settled on a nice frog splash for the finish. But then the following show after that, we were still wrestling each other. I managed to nail the 450. So for years, that Rougeau was obsessed. The first time I did a 450 splash, he lost his mind. He literally leaped into the air when he saw it. Then he started calling people from the gym over. Like, this guy's doing tricep curls, and next thing you know, he's got Jacques Rougeau. Like, come here. He's like, what? Come here. Okay, he comes, and he looks. Look, what are my guys about to do? And they do the 450. And Rougeau's like, isn't that amazing? And the guy's like, yeah, I got to finish my set. Like, they don't do this shit. So, anyway, he was obsessed with the 450, so I would never lose because I did the 450.
That was your finish,
he would just
right?
constantly put it, yeah. Even, I remember once I had a meeting at the wrestling school saying, all right, everybody, I just need you to know, if you're wrestling Kevin, you're losing because he does a 450. I was like,
you're just standing there.
It was so.
Because that's the thing. I mean, for a big guy, you're very agile.
I wasn't that big at the time either. So really, it wasn't particularly impressive. I was a scrawny, like maybe 160 pounds at the time, you know. Just he had never seen that before, mm-hmm. which is mind-blowing because 450 has been around forever, really.
Right.
But he was just, he's always been in a little bubble. So he'd never seen that before. He literally just thought I invented it. I was the first one to do it ever. I never informed him otherwise. But
do you think that's why you're so agile now? Is because you trained?
Yeah,
when
I just
you were
never stopped doing that stuff.
Right.
In all fairness, I stopped. I haven't done the 450 in about 10 years now. So next person who has to take it, it's gonna be a treat. Yeah. You know why I won't do it tonight? Because I really don't need it to beat AJ Styles. So. I already went over AJ Styles because my haircut looks like this and his looks like that. So,
but another guy you've been tied to through your whole career, even up till now, is Sami Zayn.
Yes.
Great guy. Yeah, we know how the song goes. don't try and hijack my show. This is an NXT. So, when did you first meet Sami? Was it around that time frame? Because he's from Montreal as well.
Yeah, it was in 2002. He came to one of the shows that Rougeau had that I wrestled on. At that point, a couple of my buddies that I trained with at Rougeau's school had left to go to wrestle for a company called IWS. Mm-hmm. And they met Sammy there, and they brought him to one of the Rougeau shows because at that point, Rougeau's shows were also a bit of a, like, it was kind of almost funny to go to because it was catered to family. It was a family show.
Right.
It was very important for him to, especially at that point, WWE wasn't like PG or whatever. So he was still like, you know, this isn't what WWE does. You can bring your kids to my show, no problem. But he went overboard with it. Like he'd have like ridiculous, like Spider-Man's. He had a guy dressed in a Spider-Man costume and he called him Spidey's son. Now he was like a he had a gladiator that didn't look like a gladiator. Like
Spidey's son.
The gladiator would wrestle in an outfit that looked like, well, it was a Halloween costume.
Right,
basically.
Sure.
And then he would also, we couldn't kick each other or punch each other.
Wow.
Yeah. Because, you know, you don't want kids kicking each other in the playground. Okay, fair enough. But, you know, it's kind of hard to have a wrestling,
still wrestling
match
with
that. Yeah. So he just went overboard with it. So it was kind of, it was almost like a funny thing. Like the other wrestlers from around like the area would go to the shows to kind of laugh at us. So it was neat. Anyway, that's where I met Sammy.
And, so Sammy came to laugh at you?
Yeah, I remember. Well, he didn't come to laugh at me. At that point, at that point in time, Sammy had a genuine good soul, but he was just an insane person. You've met him. So the first time I met him, he was just bouncing off the walls and just like, hey, man, good show. And he's just going like this. I remember being really annoyed with him, actually, the first time I met him.
I think pretty much everyone's pretty annoyed with Sami Zayn the first time you meet him.
It seems to be the general consensus. But he grows on you.
He
like,
does, but you
like
guys,
a disease,
you guys had a like a fungus.
Yeah, kind of.
He grows on you. But you guys have great chemistry. Did you start working right off the bat?
Yeah, like a year later, once I left Rougeau's training or whatever his company, I immediately started wrestling for IWS and MWF in Valleyfield and CCW in Quebec City, like anywhere that would take me. And Sam would just kind of be all over those places as well. So we started wrestling. Maybe not my first independent match, like on one of those small indies, but my second or third was with him. And then from that point on.
What was he called back then?
So Stevie McFly was his name. Yeah.
These names are awesome.
Yeah.
Was there ever a Stevie McFly versus Spidey's son match?
No. No, because Spidey's son was exclusive to Jacques Rougeau.
Oh, okay, sorry. So he was Speedy McFly?
Stevie.
Stevie McFly. Okay, so Stevie McFly versus the kid.
His pose was this.
One finger.
Yeah, he holds his elbow and one finger in the air. I'm sure there's a picture out there somewhere. If you look, Stevie McFly, MWF, if you Google it, I'm sure that's the picture that comes up. He has a blue bowling shirt on, like, with the collar. And, yeah.
So did you guys start cracking into the States together then as well?
Yeah, well, so that was in 2003. We started doing all these independent promotions back home together. And then in 2003, in September, or it was in the summer of 2003, this show called Tournament of Death, which is a CZW, which is a company in Philadelphia. It's a hardcore match tournament,
right.
Death match tournament or whatever. And we had a guy from IWS that wrestled there. His name was Sexy Eddie. Three X's for sexy. Great guy. Not the guy with the most common sense,
right,
is the
okay,
way I'll
yeah.
put it. He sliced an artery in his arm with a light tube. And as he's looking at his arm and blood is pouring everywhere, instead of thinking, oh, I could die, I gotta do something, he went like this into the camera, looked, and went, he clenched his fist, which made, and then he dragged it. Hey, that one thing got me, Sammy, and other IWS guys booked all over the US immediately. They're like, if that's one guy, that's one IWS guy, let's see them all.
Wow.
Of course, none of us were like him. But thankfully, we were pretty decent wrestlers. So once that happened, the next month, CZW brought four guys over for a show. Jersey Opera booked a bunch of guys. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And, you know, that's how it all started in the U.S.
What were some of your favorite promotions to work at? Because you worked all of them.
I worked a whole bunch, yeah.
Was there some better than others?
Yeah, of course, but throughout the years, I'd say the best, the independent promotions are really, like, the two independent promotions that I miss now, not that I would ever want to go back because, honestly, as much as good a time as I had on the Indies, I don't want to go back.
Like, sure.
Like, when back. I left the Indies, it was time for me to leave. Yeah. Like, I was kind of over just the way of living like an independent wrestler or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the ones I do miss are obviously Pro Wrestling Guerrilla in California. That was my home for a very long time. Like, I know a lot of people think Ring of Honor is what got me here, and of course it helped. You know, the notoriety I got from Ring of Honor helped a lot, but Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, I think, was as important, if not more. And then there's a company in Cleveland called AIW, which I only started wrestling for maybe 2 years or a year even before I came to WWE, but I had a blast there.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, disease.
Disease.
Yeah. Those two are in particular.
Because Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, I've never seen the show, but everyone tells me about it. Like, it's a small building, and yeah, it sells out, like, in 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's almost impossible. I was just talking with some guys from Germany. They'd love to go, but you can't get tickets. Mm. The tickets literally sell out in a minute, because it's 450 tickets. It's packed every show. Like, they have celebrities in L.A. that try to go.
Right, Sofia Vergara was one,
so yeah. Super Dragon, who runs the show, who runs the company, won't let people in if you don't have a ticket. So, like, the other day, they had a celebrity come in, and what was his name? He's not a huge celebrity now, but he was for many years. Like, Jerry O'Connell, is that it?
Yeah, Jerry O'Connell, right.
He tried to come in.
From Stand By Me.
He's like, oh, I want to buy a ticket. Like, well, sorry, we're sold out. Like, oh, well. See you later. So, Jerry O'Connell didn't make, like, he just literally, I think I saw a tweet of his like 2 months ago. He's like, hey, I made it in this time. But like, yeah, like celebrities go to the show. It's like this really cool in thing, and it's doing really well. Everybody's telling them you should move to a bigger building. But Super Dragon just won't, because he likes it the way it is. He thinks it's, this. Like, they also say, like, why don't you release your shows on, why don't
streaming
you do pay-per-views, or why don't you, he doesn't even like to release the shows. You know, like, now you can have a show, and the next day it's online for people to buy as an MP4 file or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He won't even do that. He doesn't want, his business model or whatever, or what's worked for him has always been DVDs and that little venue, and that's what he likes.
It'll never change.
He doesn't
want
to try to get bigger, because he likes what he is now. And you know what I mean? I think part of the charm, too, you know? Like, a lot of companies would try to get bigger, but then you don't know what's going to happen.
Well,
he likes it the way it is.
And that was kind of, like, the downfall for, like, let's say ECW. Mm-hmm. I mean, for them to start making some big money, they had to get bigger. But once it got too big, then you lose some of that exclusiveness. You know, we're part of this club, and no one can really get in. And I think that's what would happen, maybe, you know? Now, we've had a couple matches over the last few months. One was the Money in the Bank ladder match in Vegas. And then the other one was the Hell in the Cell match just from a couple weeks ago, which was an awesome match, you versus Seth Rollins. And what do you guys think? That was a great match? This is the Hell in the Cell?
Yeah.
The one time I'm looking for a pop and I don't get
you
one.
You try to clap for Russo, but you don't clap for that.
Yeah, they clap for Sexy Eddie, but not for the Hell in the Cell match. But
but Sexy Eddie with three X's.
Three X's, how could you not clap? I'm clapping for that too, right? So both of them had, like, what you would call a contraption, mm-hmm. which is some kind of a structure. Like, the ladder match, there was a ladder here, and then you had the idea of sticking two ladders that were in the turnbuckle into the other ladder that created this kind of ladder bridge thing. And then at Hell in a Cell, it was the table that was on top of another table that was up against the side of the cage. And you told me, like, I've always been kind of known for my contraptions.
Yeah.
How did you become known for contraptions?
Well, so I always try to find, because, you know, anybody could go through a table or a ladder. But I always, you know, going back years, if people watch my Ring of Honor or PWG stuff, like, you'll see I've always tried to make things as unique as possible. So if that involves setting a table differently or a ladder or whatever, or I haven't done it in WWE yet, but I'm sure it'll come eventually, where, like, I have this Tower of Doom with chairs, like 8 or 9 chairs that I, like, build.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know how. It's just something I just try to be different and not just do what everybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it comes down to, really.
What's some of the contraptions that you had, like in Ring of Honor or something?
So Ring of Honor, the first, that contraption at Money in the Bank was, it came from a Ring of Honor match. Like, we originally did the exact same thing with this ladder. And then I've had the Tower of Chairs. I've put a ladder from the apron to the guardrail with a table on top of that.
What?
Yeah.
Who was that against?
It was in Ring of Honor too. I think it was against the American Wolves, maybe Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards, a tag match.
So what happens on that contraption?
Well, so I tried to put Eddie Edwards through it, but he skillfully avoided it. And later on, it came back to haunt me because they pushed me through a giant ladder through that contraption. And then, you know, my contraptions never seem to work out either.
Yeah, almost, you're right.
It almost always seems to play against me.
That's
somehow.
Right, yeah.
Maybe I need to stop building stuff. One that did work out in my favor, though, is probably the one I'm most famous for independent fans anyways. The Ring of Honor, I had a ladder match with Generico, and we had...
Still wondering who that is.
Yeah,
never found out.
We had one really big ladder, and then another somewhat smaller ladder, face-to-face, and we bridge one ladder between the two, and then we bridge another ladder on top of that. So we had two ladders, a ladder here and a ladder there, and I gave him a pile driver from that ladder that was bridged through that one.
Good Lord.
That one worked out, though. I won the match.
It's the pile driver.
That's good.
Yeah.
It was the last time Generico was seen in the Ring of Honor, too. Coincidentally.
Wow, never seen him again.
Odd timing.
I wonder where he is.
Yeah, I know.
He's probably working. He's working in CZW.
Well, actually, what happened is he left to open an orphanage in Mexico.
Mm.
And then I heard... I later on found out that he died.
Oh. Of disease. So here you are now, though, and we were laughing about, you know, learning how to speak English from watching wrestling and being a big wrestling fan, and now you're the WWE Universal Champion.
Yes.
Which
is the premier, most important title in WWE.
It is, absolutely. Let's be honest, Raw is the major brand, always has been, always will be. But the fact that A, you became the champion, and B, that was 3 months ago now, 4 months ago.
What was it? Somebody gave me a stat earlier.
You can yell it out. Go ahead, Ed. 79 days.
Yeah.
Champion for 79 days here. That's huge. Yeah, the longest reigning, right. He was the longest reigning after one day, I believe I said. But I mean, how did that feel for you to get the championship? Because sometimes I know, like, it's business as usual, week in, week out, but that's something pretty special.
Yeah, it was. It's really hard to put into words, honestly. I felt like, so Money in the Bank happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of just, I felt like I was going to get the briefcase.
Right.
I really thought so. And then it ended up not being the case. And I remember thinking, man...
Ambrose got
I feel
it,
like
right?
I'm spinning my wheels a little. So I was starting to kind of lose, not lose, I guess I was kind of starting to lose my mind. I was like, man, I really felt like that was my moment, and it's not. And then after that, we had the brand split extension, and I got drafted really late. And I was legitimately really upset by that because I felt like, man, I'm going the opposite way I'm supposed to be going, you know? And then, so I was a little, you know, a little down by that, but then I found out we were going to team at SummerSlam and wrestle Enzo and Cass, which is neat because I had never wrestled them before. But I still felt like, man, I'm still kind of spinning my wheels. Like, it's not... I remember talking to Vince even a couple weeks before that brand split and telling him, like, I'm not here to be a middle guy. I want to be a top guy. And he was like, oh, it'll come, you know? I'm like, man, it'll come. That's nice, but I feel like you should already view me that way, you know? Mm. So it was a thing, you know? It was just a personal... I don't know. It was a thing. And then, fast forward a month later after that brand split, everything's changed. Mm-hmm. Finn got hurt. Now there needs to be a new champion. And when I heard Finn got hurt, I was really upset because that moment that he had waited for and worked so hard for happened, and now it was taken away from him. And I'm obviously really good friends with him, so I was really it was really upsetting to see him lose that opportunity. But at the same time, I was thinking, like, well, now it's got to be my time.
Right.
Like, it's got to be.
Yeah, you know? Who else is it going to be?
Which is why I showed up in a suit the following week, out of nowhere.
Which might I say, I also showed up in a suit the following week, because I was thinking, well, maybe he'll have me do it. So we both show up like idiots with suits on. Like, what are you wearing
a suit for? Oh, you look nice. You too.
What are you wearing a suit for?
And then, anyway, so then to actually be told that you're going to become the WWE Universal Champion and for it to happen... It's very surreal. The thing about it is, you know, you wait, like, I was 12 when I saw Shawn Michaels win his first WWE title. And ultimately, whether, you know, whether this gentleman wants to agree with it or not, the WWE World Championship is the WWE World Championship. The WWE Universal Championship is the WWE Championship. They're both, it's what I've, like, it doesn't matter what you call it. When you won the Undisputed title,
mm-hmm.
you won the WWE title.
Oh, yeah,
it's what, like, it's the same, it's the incarnation of what I saw Shawn Michaels win when I was 12 and thought
it's
right
the
then
direct
and there,
lineage. Yeah,
yeah, I'm going to win that title one day. Mm-hmm. That happened, and, you know, when you wait for something for 21 years, it's, so it was an amazing moment, But I pictured that moment so many times in the last 20 years. Like, how would it happen? You know, how I'd win it, or who would win it against, or this and that. And just like, it's almost what kept me going for many years, you know? Mm-hmm. So now I can't picture it anymore. It's done now.
Yeah.
So now it's all about making it mean as much as I can and enjoying it as much as I can. And it turned out to be completely different than what I ever imagined. Because I never thought it would be Triple H literally handing me the title, you know? But that moment, if anything, made it even more special, because without Triple H, I wouldn't be here right now. He's the one who took a shot on me, and he could have easily passed on me because of how I look and my style and all kinds of things. But he saw something enough to take a shot, and he's already, you know, he's obviously been a big supporter of mine. He, you know, anytime I need help, anytime I need advice, he's there. So for him to be the one to give me the title, it was actually really, it kind of brought everything again full circle, mm-hmm. and it made for a really special moment. And, you know, I really wish it had happened 1 week earlier, because in Brooklyn, I had my family there, my wife, my kids, and my parents. A week later, you know, Houston is pretty far from Montreal. So well, that was my one little regret, but it was a really incredible
night. At least
your
family got to see us work as end zone cast,
yes.
right?
Yeah, they got to witness.
It was good.
History-making moment.
Yeah, history-making moment. So you mentioned that Triple H, like, took a chance on you. How do you know, like, that he kind of fought to get you in? Did he tell you this? Or?
Well, not really, but, I mean, the way it all went down, I thought, was... So I had never had any contact with WWE ever until I heard, but it wasn't contact through me either. I just heard in 2013 that William Regal was going to be at a certain PWG show. And then I remember thinking, all right, that's my shot.
Mm-hmm.
If I do well enough for Regal to maybe invite me to a tryout, I know I can nail the tryout, and then, you know, things will take their course. Sure enough, Regal came. We had a really good match. I wrestled Johnny Gargano that night. Maybe... one of my favorite matches in PWG ever. It just worked out great, you know? Probably because of the extra motivation that Regal was there watching. And then
Regal's a cool cat, too.
Yeah.
He's not gonna be really going, good job, guys. Like, he'll just sit in the back.
So the thing about it, too, is I never met him, but I was always a huge William Regal fan. Mm-hmm. So just to have him there was pretty special. You know, to meet him, say hi, I'm like, oh, man, this is pretty amazing. And then we came back, and just like you said, he wasn't like, great job. He was just like, took us aside, like, and he told us very, it's like, that was a fantastic match, gentlemen. You know, like, and he's
very
like,
serious.
And he's really, this is the thing, you know, like, you watch a PWG match back then or today, and some veterans might look down on it because it's spotty or it's too much or this and that. You know, I've had, I mean, I'll throw his name out there because I don't care, but like, I've had like Al Snow come to a Ring of Honor show, and I know for a fact that all he did, and at that point he was already working for TNA. All he was watching Ring of Honor show where we know what we're doing for the Ring of Honor crowd. We know exactly how to do our matches for the Ring of Honor crowd. And this guy, who's a veteran, is sitting there bashing everything he's seeing on the show next to our fans
mm-hmm.
because he doesn't think it's the right way. Yet the 600-700 people around him are all loving it. There's veterans like that, and then there's veterans like William Regal who could have said, oh, it was way too much. What are you doing? This and that. He's like, that was fantastic. He said, there's a lot of different tastes in wrestling. There's a lot of different ways to do it. I think what you guys did, obviously for your crowd, they loved it. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? So just to have that, I was like, man,
right.
That's what it's all about. But then that was it. No, like, oh, you want to come to a tryout or anything? I'm like,
here's
well,
the contract.
But it was good enough for me, honestly. I was like, man, that's amazing. But then a week later, I got a text from Sarah Amato, Sarah Del Rey, who worked at the Performance Center already at that time. She's like, hey, William Regal wants you to come for a tryout. So I did the tryout, and then things snowballed from there. But after the tryout, they told me, you should probably look into the logistics of moving your family to Florida. I'm like, oh, man. I think it's good. But we can't say for sure because mm-hmm. we still need the official word, which obviously means Triple H. And it took 2 months to get it.
Mm.
But I had never met Triple H. I never heard, you know, I never talked to him. I'm like, man, what if he just, for all I know, maybe he doesn't even know who I am. Like, he might just look at one of my pictures and be like, pass. You know what I mean? But then they called me. He's like, no, we're offering you a contract. They did say, like, We have to tell you, don't get your hopes up for Raw or SmackDown or the main roster. You'll get a chance in NXT like everyone else. But, you know,
but
you,
no
might
guarantees.
Not, you might not be Vince's cup of tea.
Ah.
And I said, well, the challenge. I'm up to the challenge. And Canyon Seaman, who's the one who called me, said, well, I figure you would be. So it just kind of happened that way. So Triple H had to make that final call. But I later found out, I actually found out just a few weeks ago, that I was talking to Triple H about it. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm glad to see Gargano doing well because he's the guy I wrestled at PWG that time Regal came. That's the match that made Regal offer me a trial. I was like, oh, no. Like, what? Like, well, Regal was kind of there to see you. particularly. I didn't know that.
He was scouting you.
It's like, we already knew you. He's like, I already knew I wanted to bring you in, but I don't know you. Mm-hmm. It's like, I can't just sign somebody without knowing them. I have to see, like, you did the trial because we had to see what kind of human being you were before. So I didn't know that. I thought, you know, like, things just happen like that, but obviously, I guess, apparently, you know, there was already an ulterior motive for Regal.
See, there you go. Yeah. Came to scout.
But man, he played it sly. He didn't let me know at all. Yeah.
So we're winding down here, and we're going to get ready to get some questions from our fine studio audience. But a couple last things. First of all, I have to bring up the best friends angle because
wait.
There you go.
It's an angle?
Well, yeah. Well. Yes.
Broke my.
But I mean, we've both been doing this for a long time, you know. And you always, when something strikes gold, you know it instantly. And I've now traced it back to exactly where it started, which was in London.
In England, yeah.
In England, yeah. Where I think we had some random tag match.
It was me and you. It was the SmackDown special. Oh, these guys don't like each other that Monday on Raw. Let's put them in a tag match on SmackDown.
That's what we used to call it. We had two TVs a week. They'd have a match on Monday, and then the SmackDown special would be a combination of two.
Yeah.
You know, if it was Owens and Zayn, then there was Jericho and Rollins, and the next SmackDown special would be Owens and Jericho versus Zayn and Rollins, which is probably what the match was.
It was Ambrose.
Ambrose,
very
okay.
close.
Yeah, same thing, right? So, yeah, so we had this match, and then when it was done, you just ran down the aisle and, like, launched yourself.
Because, so...
And Vince. I was like, oh, my God. And I just braced this, and I caught you. And I was like, and then we just stood there for a second. It was, like, so hilarious. But Vince said what?
Vince was very specific before. He's like, well, so when Chris pushes Ambrose and you get the victory, you act like it's all you. It's a huge moment for you. Like, you just won the Stanley Cup. I'm like, well, I wouldn't celebrate like that if I won the Stanley Cup. But anyway, all right. So I did. I just went overboard. I ran and jumped and hugged you and then... You had goat on your tights. I called you goat. You called me a donkey, and it just kind of went quick. Then at that point, I thought we were off the air. So we started kicking the cab and just doing ridiculous.
Yeah.
We came back to Vince howling, so it worked
and,
out.
And he was like, I was like, you know, there's some money there. He's like, absolutely. And then, you know, here we
and
are.
And later on, we did later. The, we still weren't like a permanent thing. And then we did the IT promo, remember?
Yeah.
Money in the Bank.
He's the one who started IT, by the way. Because I said... Because we had done a lot of improv stuff. We even actually even did a little demo tape to try and get our own buddy cop movie for WWE Films. But Mike Luisi turned us down, so send all hate mail to Mike Luisi. Mike Luisi, what is it in French again?
Sisle.
Mike Luisi, Sisle. So yeah, so we were doing this promo, and I just went, I said, you better watch it. And then you just threw back.
Watch what?
And I went, it. And then we both, you could see me start laughing right at the end of the promo because I couldn't hold it. I was like, oh my God, that's so stupid. That's so stupid. And they went to black.
Del Rio was with us for that one too. Yeah. He was off in the corner talking about a perro and stuff like that. That's all he'd say. Did you guys notice towards the end of his run, all he would say in promos is call everybody dogs.
Yeah.
And a severe obsession with perros.
Hey, perro.
That's all he would talk
hey, perro.
About. Except the one time, remember, we needed him to say it.
Yeah.
And he didn't say it. It's just, I'm
the
like,
one time.
Come on, it just pours out of you usually, and he doesn't say it. So I had to say it. What, are you going to call me a perro next? He's like, oh, yeah, yeah, that's it.
He still didn't say it. But that led, so I just had my birthday overseas last week or a couple days ago.
Yeah,
whatever.
November 9th.
November 9th. And I've had, I think, probably 5 or 6 birthdays overseas. Because we always have a WWE tour or a Fozzy tour, always in that time frame. So this last birthday, though, was my all-time favorite overseas birthday ever, which was basically... So I'm backstage, and everyone knows it's my birthday, and I'm like, okay, so they're going to do something for me. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure. So he comes up to me, goes, Fit wants you involved. Fit Finley's the agent. He goes, Fit wants you involved in the last match. But he's kind of got this, like, smile, and he's like, Fit wants you involved in the last match. And I was like, okay, sounds good. So I'll tell it from my side and you tell it from your side. So then I go to the gorilla position to wait for my cue to be involved
see,
in the match.
I should have told them that. That was a huge mistake.
To what?
Well, I should have told him, don't just be all sitting there because he's going to know.
Everybody's in gorilla.
By the time the show's done, there's five people watching like the main event like this. Like, oh, my God.
The ones that think they're going to get brownie points for watching the main event.
Yeah, and we've seen this match like 8 times already.
And whatever. The rest are in the back. And especially the reason why I knew someone was going is that New Day was sitting in the gorilla, and they're always just
playing video games
in the back.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if they're out here, I know something's going on. And, like, everybody's there, right? So I come and do my run-in, and then, of course... We beat Seth Rollins, and then Seth is down, and then you grab the microphone and start saying that it's my birthday, and sings this wicked happy birthday rendition.
Hell of a rendition.
With You're My Best Friend and I Love You was in there, and it was totally in key, and it was perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And then we went through the list of things that I wanted for my birthday, which I think was an above-ground swimming
pool.
A new bicycle.
19-something
1986
collection of the Transformers.
Transformers, which Woods popped for.
And the entire record, like all the CDs from that Halloween band from Germany.
Halloween, which, yeah. We were in Germany at the time. I was like, and the entire collection of Halloween albums. And they popped because we were in Germany. And so then, and then you call a cake to come down. And then you take it from there.
Well, so the cake was already there, actually. I'd already called it down. But then as we were talking, a bunch of guys like circled the ring. I'm like, yeah, that's right. You come show Chris Jericho some respect. Then I started naming off the guys that were there, and I realized, whoa, those people all hate us. And then I turned and I'm like, I see Seth with the cake, but you're not turning around. So I'm like, look out! And that's when you turned.
And I had no idea when the cake came down. I even said to him, well, you know where this is going. And I thought he was going to get powerbombed into the cake because he put it between two chairs. And I was like, oh, yeah, Owens is going through that cake. And literally had no idea or thought or inkling that it was going to be me. And I was literally looking over at the fans, like, all right, I want my Halloween albums. And he goes, look out. I'm like, what are you talking about? I was like, oh, no, I'm going to get it. Boom. So the cake goes in my face, and I don't sell it for a second. Because I'm like, how did I not know that? And then the cake falls, and Seth pedigrees Kevin into the cake. Face
Which
first.
Was just my clever way of getting to eat cake.
So it was a great birthday. We both took a couple bumps in the cake, and all I was envisioning was Vince.
Yeah, dude, as I'm laying flat, like down in the cake going, I feel somebody fall next to me, like, what's going on? I didn't realize you just...
I just took a bump because it's so slippery that the cake made me take a bump. And I was imagining, remember when Steve Austin shot the ring full of beer from the beer trunk? And Vince was just in the middle, like, swimming in the beer. Like, and I was just like, I can't stand this cake. It's going to make me take a bump in it. We'll take another bump in it. And it was one of the best birthdays, and it took us about an hour to get all the cake out. My scarf now smells of sour cake. It's terrible.
We ruined it.
Yeah, it's bad. Actually, I took it to the dry cleaner, and the lady goes, ooh, this smells like baby crap. And I was like, no, it's just from a cake. She goes, no cake smells like that, son.
It wasn't the best cake.
It was not the best cake.
I will say, it wasn't.
It was the best birthday I ever had overseas, thanks to my best friend, Kevin Owens. And it's been great chatting with you in front of everybody here today. Great stuff, man. That went by fast.
Yeah.
That went by fast.
It always goes by fast when you talk about Jacques Rougeau.
I know, Jacques Rougeau. Spidey's son, if you're out there, if someone's filming this, I want to sign.
There's a lot of them out there because he would give the costume to different
guys. You would never know.
Yeah,
you'd never know who the exact...
One of them would grow too old to be, well, I don't know, I'm 22 now. I don't want to be Spidey's son anymore. All right, next 15-year-old is willing to do it, please.
I'm Spidey's grandson. Anyone?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Is Jericho.
So what we're going to do now, Jared, are you going to take the microphone in the crowd and we're going to do, he's got his scarf, there you go. That's a good one. That's one of those giant Lenny Kravitz scarfs. Okay. So
we're going to start with a fan Q&A. One more time for Chris and Kevin. So what I'm going to do is, if you raise your hand, I'm going to try to get as many as possible in the short amount of time that we have here. I will come to you at the mic. Please let them be PG questions. If you have anything else, I will toss you out. There are kids here. All right, jump down. Yo, what's your question?
You guys were great, by the way. Thank you so much. Even the guy, the AJ Styles guy, we're just having fun with you, so it was fun. Is he still here? Did he leave? He's still here. Okay, he's quiet now, though. Good. All right, good.
Thank you.
He learned his lesson.
Chris, Kevin, hi, my name is Ali. Nice to meet you guys.
Hey, man.
I have a question, Kevin. During your time as an independent wrestler, how was it like, you know, getting booked shows? You know, like,
how do you go about getting booked on shows, basically?
Yeah. And for Chris, during your longevity of your career, right? Does it get like, you know, harder to get over like over the course of the years, or does it come naturally to you?
All right, so Kevin, you go first.
So I mean, it was pretty simple, honestly. You just gotta email whatever companies you think you'd want to wrestle for, usually you have to be realistic about what your expectations, because most independent companies don't have money or don't want to spend money. So if you're willing to do the first couple of shows and kind of eat it on the price, if you do a good enough job, you know, maybe they'll bring you back and then you could start working on getting more money and stuff like that. But ultimately, it's just about getting your foot in the door. And a lot of that just involves getting in touch with promoters and, you know, maybe sending highlight video of what you can do. And hopefully you're good enough that they want to bring you in, you know.
And I think the key to longevity in this business or any business where you're kind of in the public eye is to reinvent yourself and to always... I never wanted to be a guy who was just kind of resting on my catchphrases from 10, 15 years ago, and there are guys out there like that, and there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, I wouldn't have any joy in that. So I always find it's a challenge to constantly reinvent and recreate. It's much like I always use the Madonna theory or David Bowie, where they were different every record and had a different look and a different vibe, but it was still them. So I'm trying to be the Madonna of wrestling.
You are a material boy.
Hey, so my question for Chris, and so on your podcast, all those DDP segues, all those two car segues. Do you have those all pre-written? Do you like come up for them for each episode? Because like, I know you might get some hate for it, but I really love them.
You what now?
I really love them. They're like so smooth.
I always wanted to make, actually when I started the podcast, I listened to Steve Austin's show a couple times, and the ads on his show were almost some of the best parts because he's such a character. I mean, Steve's a total goofball if you guys don't know him. But so I wanted to make my ads part of the show, not to where you tune out or fast forward them, but to make them fun. So there's a little bit of a copy that's written down, but I'll go off, and that's why if I feel like singing a line because it reminds me of a song, or if I want to say it in a weird accent, like for some reason DDP yoga, I always say like the DDP yoga workouts, because Hans and Franz would go, you don't do the workout, it was time for the workout. So I always just love saying DDP yoga, do the workout whenever you can, and just, you know, it's more to pop myself than anything. And if I like it, usually other people do as well.
Hey, out of everybody you've wrestled, this is for both of you. Out of everybody you guys wrestled in WWE, what's been your favorite person to wrestle with?
Oh, good question. Well spoken, man.
Yeah.
Good job. Let's give him a hand. That's a young guy there. He's taking a bow. Kevin?
I guess it always comes down to Sammy, because it's very easy to have a really good match with him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, always what you're looking for. Yeah. But I've had fun times with so many people. Like, the list could go on and on. But I guess at the top of the list would have to be Sammy.
For me, if you go through the career, I think that The Rock and I had tremendous chemistry. I think the Rey Mysterio feud I did in 09 was perfect. And then the Shawn Michaels feud in 2008 was probably my favorite program I've ever had. And then as far as, like, partners, Big Show was my favorite partner I've ever had, and then this best friend's real life situation that we have, I think, is also one of my favorite things I've ever had. I'm not just saying that either.
This question is for both of you guys. What would you say of any indie wrestlers out there? Who do you think you'd want on the main roster or in NXT, even out of anyone you've wrestled or any other promotion you've seen?
Who we want to see from the independents here?
Yeah, come
basically
to WWE.
Well, yeah, obviously, I always answer Adam Cole to that one, because I feel like it's inevitable. I think he will be here. But there's a lot of really good guys on the indies. Tyson Dukes. I think he definitely deserves, he belongs here. And if we're not talking about independent guys, I think we're just talking about a guy from NXT that should be up here. I think, again, Ty Dillinger should definitely be up. That's his thing.
Yeah, it does that. I don't watch NXT, so I don't know. But I do know this. I worked with it's not an O. I don't have time to watch NXT. That's what you guys do. Shinsuke Nakamura is a very unique, amazing talent with just the way he does things, Japanese, whatever he is, it doesn't matter. He's got this connection with the audience that he's going to be a huge star when he comes up here. I can't wait to see him come up here, and I hope it's sooner than later.
Hey, so my question is for both you guys. So what did you guys think of the tag team match at NXT TakeOver for the titles, and would you want to see DIY on the main roster sometime soon?
So I didn't see the match, and I know Chris didn't either. We were both busy last night. I wish I could have went to the show in person, but I had other commitments. But I heard it's great, and I'm not surprised. I heard it was great, and DIY definitely. I would love to see them here. Gargano, Gargano and Ciampa. Ciampa and I are actually really good friends. We've been very close for many years, and I'm really glad to see him here. Gargano, as well. Like I said, I told Triple H years ago, like a couple weeks ago, that years ago I had that match with him in PWG, and I was glad to see him get something good out of it. I think it's just, again, a matter of time until they're here, and they belong here just like we do.
Good questions. All right, here she is.
What has been your favorite Chris Jericho catchphrase?
My favorite Chris Jericho? What's your favorite one?
Stupid idiot.
The thing with those catchphrases is that, for example, stupid idiot, like when I first started saying that 6 months ago maybe, it was like it got heat. People would get mad at it.
You've actually been saying it for years. I don't know if you know this.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Really?
I've been saying it for years.
Really? Okay.
I just kind of started catching on for some reason.
The drink it in, man, that got heat, Gift of Jericho, all that stuff. But I think that for me, my favorite thing right now is putting people on the list. It's just, it's become so popular that the only way I can get any kind of heat is if I refuse to put people on the list. So, but that's just, it's so ridiculous that it makes, like I said, it makes me laugh. And if it makes me laugh, usually that translates. And if you're going old school, I mean, Welcome to Raw is Jericho is pretty classic too. So. Thank you. Good stuff.
Kevin, this question's for you. In the independent promotions, you use the package pile driver a lot, and I know you use renditions of it now. Is there any chance somewhere down the line we'll see a Steenalyzer? It's been a while since you've used that.
I don't know that one's going to happen. I don't know that the package pile driver won't show up eventually, but the Steenalyzer one is...
Which one is it?
So it's I get the guy up in the powerbomb, I hook their neck, and then I just throw them backwards into the turnbuckles and stuff like that. It's honestly done... It's done quite a bit of damage in its day, so I don't know that it's the best thing to bring here for where guys wrestle on a nightly basis.
Which is the one where my favorite one? What's that one called?
Well, that one's the PG version of the package power.
Okay, but it's like a package power.
I pick you up like that, and then I swing you out to the
side.
That's
a fun
move.
I like
that. Your head. Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah. I'm the worst with move names, by the way. I have no idea what things are called.
Hey guys, I was wondering how many of your interactions backstage or on the ring are they improvised or are they scripted?
Which ones backstage?
Like, just any of the ones that you do together. It seems very improvised, like very natural. So
we usually have kind of an idea of what we need to establish, like to get done in whatever segment we have. But
we usually write
obviously,
them too.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of trust in Chris because he's been here for so long, and I'm starting to earn that trust too. And we work with one of the writers that we work with. This is you guys follow the independents will know him as Jimmy Jacobs.
He's awesome.
Jimmy's great, and he's got a good actually. The list was
Jimmy
just,
created the
yeah,
list.
Jimmy
yeah.
created the list.
He created it. Jimmy created the list. What the hell am I doing here?
Jimmy's got a pretty good idea of how to write for us, so that he has, he knows what we'll like and what we won't like, and then we kind of work three
he's
of us
really
together.
Good. Yeah, I really enjoy working good, with him.
He loves that we talk about him and put him over to
well,
us.
Well, yeah, I mean, he deserves the credit. He's actually be the best writer that I worked with since Brian Gewirtz. He's my
great,
favorite. Yeah, absolutely.
Hi, Chris. What actually happens when you're on the list?
What?
I just want to know.
You don't want to know. Remember when he said what happened to El Generico?
That's right. He was go to Mexico, you open an orphanage, and then you die. The worst part of which is taking care of a bunch of kids, you know?
El Generico was on La Lista.
Hi there. You mentioned your pitched buddy cop movie. Is there any chance you could show us some of the dialogue from it?
We can't. We literally, it's not like something we've written that we practice. We just talk
to
each other. It's basically what we've been doing for the last hour or so.
Yeah. We turned the camera on and we said, okay, so pretend that we just lost the Partners of the Year award at the precinct for the police Partners of the Year award, and we just press record and we talked for about 3 minutes.
We argued about lint from the dryer.
Lint from the dryer. About fruit. How you didn't think you love fruit too much? Why do you love fruit? And it was actually really funny. We sent it to Vince, and Vince said he loved it. And then we sent it to this other guy, Michael Luisi, and Michael Luisi can suck it in French. Michael Luisi, chachon, whatever it was.
I like your version better. I'm telling everybody to switch off from now on.
Hi. Go Jets. You got a Jets jersey here. Wow, I thought you were going to get booed for that. Good, good.
Hi, I have a question for...
I got the Jets tattooed right there, right on the Jason mask. There you go.
I have a question for Chris. I want my dad to get me one of those cool jackets, the light-up jackets. where could I get one?
Well, there's two answers to that. The real answer is that I got them made, custom made by this guy in Los Angeles who did like all of Alicia Keys and Justin Bieber and David Lee Roth, and we kind of created the lighted jacket on our own. Those ones are out of your price range, let me tell you. But there is also other ones that you can buy online for about $400. They make them in India. And that may or may or not have been the one that was used when Ambrose destroyed my jacket. I'll never say
complete
for sure.
Coincidence. Yeah. You just happened to wear the one from India. Yeah.
Jericho, when did you make the list?
Well, are you wearing a scarf or not? It's just your jacket. It looks like kind of a scarf. I haven't made the list yet. If I do make the list, I'll just spontaneously combust. How did I make it? Oh, well, it was Jimmy Jacobs' idea, and then we have this guy.
And Chris yelled at Ellis a bunch.
Yeah, the guy.
Inside joke.
Ellis.
You guys don't get it.
It took him about 3 weeks to make that that piece of aluminum that you see with the list of Jericho written on it. We could have made it in about an hour and a half. But thanks, Ellis, if you're listening, which you're not.
Hello, this is for both of you. So this is just a question. In the future, who would one opponent be that you would want to face?
Good question, Noah.
Thank you.
I remember your name. You wanted to...
This is kind of a question that's got too many answers to just say one, you know? But, I mean, I always say Brock Lesnar because I feel, more than anything, I feel like people want to see it. And it'd be interesting to see how it goes down. So that's probably the guy.
I mean, if you're looking through guys, like for me, I've never wrestled Brock Lesnar once. So that's there. I had one single match with Undertaker that was awesome. But other than that, we never really worked each other very much. I think eventually, if Kevin and I ever have a match, I think it'll be awesome. I think just for fun. It would just be for fun. Like it'd be an exhibition.
The tennis match.
Yeah, like a tennis match, yeah.
So this is for Chris. Just wondering, do you think we see any more, you going for a 10-time Intercontinental Championship, or do we see any other future titles in your future career?
I don't know, it's funny because you forget sometimes it's like 9-time Intercontinental Champion, and that's like to get 10 would be a nice round number, but I've kind of, you know, been there, done that. If there was a good angle and a good storyline behind it, absolutely. If it's just to get it, just to have the perfect 10, there you go, Ty Dillinger fans. I know what he's doing, I'm just kidding. Yeah, for sure. But the only thing is I refuse to let Miz have more Intercontinental Championships than me. So if he gets to 8, then I'll go for 10.
He's getting close.
He's got 6 now. Someone told me he's got 6, yeah.
Chris, you're my favorite wrestler of all time, always have been. The best Chris Jericho catchphrase is, ask him.
Ask
That's
him.
The best one.
I got that from Jushin Liger.
Oh, awesome.
He actually says that. That's where I got it from. He'd be like, ask him.
So it's not really yours.
So Liger thought of asking. He thought of answering.
My question is, we all know your history with Bill Goldberg, and he's one of the reasons why you left WCW, Greenberg, yes, as you used to call him. My question is there any bad blood at all between the two of you, and how do you feel about his return coming to WWE?
I think it's great. I mean, it's a huge match. People are super into it. I'm excited to see the match tonight, you know? And, you know, I mean, you don't get along with everybody, you know, in life, but I have no problems with Bill, and I've seen him backstage a few times and said hi, and said hi to his wife and son, who are very friendly and very, very nice. I think actually took a picture with his son on his first day in, which was probably made Bill blow his stack. But, but yeah, I'm excited for him, and I'm happy for him, and I'm really looking forward to the match tonight. I want to see what happens.
Can I be your third best friend?
What did she say? Did
she think she said? Did she ask if she could be our best friend?
Come up here. Bring her up here. Absolutely. Here, come over here. I'm going to grab you like this.
That's a deadlift. Look at that.
Oh, yeah. Come over here. Take a picture of this, the three best friends. All right. All right, give me a hug. All right. What's your name?
Haley.
Okay, Haley. So Haley, Kevin, and Chris are best friends.
She's...
You have.
Okay, do you want to replace Braun Strowman on our team tonight? Thank you. Did you see that dude's got Braun's new shirt? Stand up. Stand up. World's okayest wrestler.
Holy smokes.
I legitimately love Braun Strowman,
he's great.
And I have to say that, or he'll tear my head clean off.
He's awesome.
Tough act to follow, but I have to say, Kevin, you're the most creative and entertaining wrestler we've ever seen since Chris.
All right.
Oh, nice.
I'll take it.
And Chris, my question for you, my friends and I have always referred to you as the Madonna of wrestling, at the risk of offending you. So when I heard you say that, the way you've evolved, and we've compared it to Madonna and you too, how do you find that creativity? I know you're an artist, and I know that Kevin's got it too. What place do you find that?
I remember that somebody asked Stephen King once, where do you get the ideas for your stories? And it's like, I don't know. And I really don't know. I think sometimes I'll try something like, for example, like the scarf thing. I really do like wearing scarves. It comes from Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones and kind of Steven Tyler. Like it's Paul Stanley. I just like it. And so when I started wearing them earlier this year, knowing that I was going to be turning heel, but I was still a babyface, I was subtly trying to piss people off. And they're like, get this scarf. He looks so stupid. He's not wearing a shirt. Why don't you wear a shirt? And it's like, it's working. This legitimately makes people mad. So that's kind of, you just try something and then take that little bit of a seed and grow it, you know, or like the gift of Jericho. I said that a few times and I just went, drink it in, man, like whatever. And then it was like, wow, that actually got a reaction. Okay, well, what if I take man, like drink it in, man, like just obnoxiously, right? So that's, you just have to listen to what the crowd is doing. And Jimmy Hart told me this years ago when I was in WCW, you can always tell when something's getting over if there's a sign in the crowd the next week after you say something, or the next night. Because he said, you can't control, you know, what people write on a sign. And that's another way of seeing what's getting over, is just looking at what people are having in the crowd and the signs that they're saying and how they're reacting to the, you know, when they started chanting stupid idiot, I was like, oh, this has now become a good guy thing. So just listen.
If you couldn't get the wrestling job, what job would you take?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't think I would be, because they probably wouldn't let me do it without any kind of schooling, and there's no way I'd go to school long enough to do it, but I'd love to be a zoologist and take care of animals and stuff. So mainly, basically, since they wouldn't let me be a zoologist, I think if I wasn't wrestling, I would literally just hang around zoos all day until they kick me out.
There's the creepy
zoo guy. Good question, buddy.
All right, thanks so much to Kevin Owens, my best friend, for being here. What a great time it was. What a great conversation. He's a third-time guest on Talk is Jericho, and we are just steamrolling. He's the WWE Universal Champion. I'm the WWE Universal Champion. I'm the WWE United States Champion. He's the WWE United States Champion, and that's not going to change. Thanks to KO for joining me. I hope you loved it. And remember this also. Set your DVRs because February 2nd, 9 p.m. Eastern, that's when This is the XFL, the 30 for 30 ESPN special directed by Charlie Ebersole. Don't forget, premieres on ESPN. Amazing story about the XFL. We had a great time talking last week. You got to check that out on February 2nd. All right, thanks again to all of you guys for supporting this show, and thanks for supporting my tremendous Talk is Jericho sponsors. I couldn't do this without you or them, and that includes the OG sponsor, Amazon. Easiest way to help out the show, use my Amazon links whenever you do any online shopping, and you can find my Amazon links at podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit Talk is Jericho. I got Amazon links for the USA, the UK, the Canada. Every time you use Talk is Jericho, them links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to this show to help us cover production costs. No extra fees or hidden charges. Once again, just go to podcastone.com, click on the Killer Deal button in the top right corner of the page, then hit Talk is Jericho. You'll find all my great sponsors there as well. DDPYoga.com/Jericho. You'll get 25% off all DDPY merch. And when you buy a max pack or a combo pack, you'll get a second one for 50% off the price that's already 25% off. Don't forget about Nature Box as well. The best, healthiest, tastiest snacks you can get. Naturebox.com/Jericho, and you get 50% off your first order. How much money am I saving you here? Don't forget to hit me up on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho to let me know which Jericho Network podcast episodes are your favorite right now. So many to choose from. Keeping it 100 with Conan, Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. I know Bulldog Bob Brown's appearances are going over big. 5 days a week, Beyond the Darkness. It's amazing. It's so scary, and people are going nuts for that show. It's a huge hit right out of the gate. Of course, Team Tiger Awesome bringing up the rear. Some great funny discussions, including the latest where they create their own Super Bowl. You got to check this one out. And Talk is Jericho's had some great guests lately, including HBK last Friday. It's a must-listen. Charlie Ebersole, like we said. So many great things going on. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for listening. Check out all the information at Talk is Jericho. And don't forget, hit the subscribe button on iTunes for all the great Jericho Network podcasts. Subscribe, rate, review, give some stars. Thank you so much. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And coming up on Friday, my Canadian musical brother, Devin Townsend, will be here. We won a Juno together. That's a Canadian Grammy. And Devin is off his rocker. Great, great, hilarious, genius. He's huge around the world, and he's coming to Talk is Jericho to tell his wacky, crazy story. One of the most gifted musicians I've ever heard, and one of the funniest guys as well. So Devin will be here on Friday. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.